Chuck Cottrell, 471 History. I want to try to get a little bit of background on when you started. You know, how young were you when you started taking lessons, or you know, when you come upon a piano?
I started taking lessons.
Play by ear.
Yeah, I think whatever my mother and father played piano.
Both of them?
Yeah, both of them.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know how old I was.
Yeah.
But whatever, I heard my mother play something one day, and I could play it,
mm-hmm.
and I could also play the chord.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they didn't make a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I've always been able to do that.
Right.
And,
well, did they give you lessons, or they sent you to a teacher?
No, they sent me to a teacher down here on Glen Street. I was living here in Wilmington.
Oh, you were living here?
Yeah, I went to school. I went to Turner School.
Oh, okay.
Junior high, high school.
It's a neighborhood. You back home.
Yeah, almost.
Yeah.
But Miss Brown on Glen Street. You know how teachers sometimes will play your lesson, or your parents will play your lesson. So I've been taking several lessons. I was doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
So I was playing my lesson, and then Brown caught me looking out of the window.
Mm-hmm.
And she went back and got an old lesson. Told me to play it, and I couldn't play it because I didn't remember it.
You weren't reading
it? No, I wasn't reading it, but they were playing it for me.
Oh.
If I heard it, it would have stuck.
Yeah.
So, she told my parents not to ever
send you back.
Play my, no, she
played lessons.
Played lessons in front of me.
Right.
And that's how I
started learning
how to read.
Yeah. Okay. Well, did your parents read?
They could read. Yeah, they could read. Both of them were very good singer.
Right.
I mean, really,
mm-hmm.
Into, real vocal.
Mm-hmm. It's a classic, it's in the classics.
Yeah, they
could. Yeah.
My father loved opera. I would listen to opera every Saturday.
Yeah.
But, and then when I was in, my father was sure waiting then. Just like, I guess that's where I got it from.
Okay.
I got a bunch of children.
Yeah.
And I ran into bed and I heard he had the radio on. And at that time they used to have hotels, used to have bands. And I heard this music and it set my soul on.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
And the band out of Chicago, Illinois, I can't remember the hotel. My father had always told me about the blues. He loved Bessie Smith. We had quite a few Bessie Smith records.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard that he didn't know much about jazz.
Mm-hmm.
He was a jazz. And so I heard this music on that. And I asked him about it the next day. He told me what it was, and I started looking into it, talking to some of the older fellows in the neighborhood. Come to find out that there were two fellows older than I was, they weren't that old compared to me, who played piano and were playing.
Hmm. Do you know their name?
Yeah, one was named Willie Davis, Will Davis, and Billy Rideout.
Rideout.
That's it.
Is that, because there's a Rideout from Strickland, he used to live up in Charleroi, How old a person was it? Was it?
He was maybe 10 years older than I.
Okay, and you're talking about like in
the
30s. Okay, Stanley. Not Stanley. Look on here, because you'll see his name. It's kind of alphabetically. And they called him, they have it R-I, I think it's R-I-T out.
R-I-T.
But no, they might have, but he's on there. Because he's one of Earl Hines's partners. Yeah, it's on here. Or maybe it's down on the bottom.
In number 6.
If you are... well, anyway, okay, so it was right out.
So I used to walk by in the summertime, you know, people didn't have air conditioning and the windows would be open.
Uh-huh.
And I would hear this thing that Billy Rideout would be playing. I know what it, now I know what it
was. Uh-huh.
But it was the old
stride.
No, it was a progression.
Oh.
It was the 251.
Oh, okay. You know, okay.
Only his two wasn't a minor, it was major four.
Okay.
251.
Okay.
And it sounded, excited me.
Here it is. It's down on the bottom. They call him Right Trap.
Uh-huh.
But it's Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But he's part of what I'm saying, you know, in our
mm-hmm.
background.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Did you play through junior and senior high school? Were you in the orchestra? Or?
I was in the orchestra in junior high school.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that I couldn't stay in that orchestra. They said, Mr. Camp, that was
mm-hmm.
his name.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't
mm-hmm.
any, I don't mean any disrespect
mm-hmm.
to
yeah.
music, but where I could hear other things.
Yeah, okay.
And occasionally, in rehearsal, I put it in.
Yeah,
and it would drive him nuts.
Yeah.
Okay. I never did it in a performance.
Mm-hmm.
But finally, between he and Lou Brown, they told my father to send me to this fellow who's really Frankie J.
What's his last name?
Frankie J. White fellow.
J.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Playing at Frankstown, he had a studio up over the
mm.
drugstore.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a band at night. And, so that I could study
mm-hmm. a little more
modern
ahead.
Harmony.
Right.
And,
right.
Yeah. So they, it wasn't that they just wanted to hit me because I wasn't going to play the classics.
Mm-hmm.
Because that wasn't, yeah. I always felt like I had restraints.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I get too tied in into
mm-hmm.
an arrangement,
too structured. Yeah.
I get frustrated,
mm-hmm.
and that's why I don't get into any discussions
mm-hmm.
with
mm-hmm.
people. You know, they think, "Well, you're
mm-hmm.
selfish, or you're prima donna, or something."
Mm-hmm.
So I never get into discussions.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt like I had shackles on.
Mm-hmm.
And, gets too
confining.
That's right.
Yeah.
It frustrates.
Hmm.
You know, I'll stay within the range.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Know,
okay.
But
okay.
any
yeah.
more confining than that.
Yeah.
Different people used to ask me why I would quit a certain job and take another job,
mm-hmm.
pay less money,
mm-hmm.
so I had more freedom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was happy.
Mm-hmm. Did you, when you went into the Army, did you get in Army bands when you were in the Army?
No.
Huh.
You couldn't get in the Army band just playing piano, unless you could fake another instrument. You know, something
okay.
I tried to,
okay.
some got away with. But at the time I went in, things weren't going too well for the Allies,
mm-hmm.
and you had to have a...
Right. What year were you, did you go to the Army?
I went in the Army at 43.
43.
And I had a job overseas 2 years.
Right.
So,
so when it was over, you was overseas. Then when it ended, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was, I had a good record in the Army. The times that I got into trouble in the Army, I was going somewhere to try to find a pimp.
Try to play,
That's right. Every time I got into trouble,
it was about the pimp.
After I got caught up, you know, I was in the Philippines, caught me in this pretty awful in the piano and there, and I was in there playing.
when you came home, you didn't join, you say you didn't join 471 at that time.
No.
But did you play around a little bit when you first got out of the Army?
No, because I was kind of frustrated. When I left now, and I went in, when I went into service, there was one style of music. And I was coming back from overseas, and I heard
right.
Nat Cole, and I heard someone playing it was a different type of music.
It changed.
And that set my soul on fire. And by the time I got back here, someone would tell me Buzz Bird. And I heard a record.
And Eckstein's band and all that.
That's right.
Yeah.
And there weren't too many, there were a few people around here who into that, but everyone was just beginning to get into it.
Right.
And so I spent the little time I had playing, you know, I worked with some guys that had bands, but they were still playing. I was seeking.
Well, when you went to Indianapolis, did you, I mean, you know, went out that way, did you find, you know, did you find what it was that you, the style of music that you were trying to get to?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
I went there and I was lucky enough I went out there and ran into a booking agent. And Tiana Prairie evidently was kind of scarce. So to hide me out, he sent me to a hotel. I guess he had an arrangement with this guy. Sent me down to Terre Haute, Indiana, and told me just stay there till I heard from him. So while I'm there, they had a piano downstairs. I'm down there practicing, just pushing around. And I was messing around a little bit with Now Is the Time. I know you know the blues, but it wasn't blues the way I knew it. I heard somebody say, hey, let me help you with that. And it turned out to be a trumpet player named Freddie Webster.
Right.
Who was given some kind of seminar at a college in Terre Haute.
Okay.
And he was staying there, well, you know how segregation was in those days.
And
he was staying at the Red Hotel. That was the name, Red Hotel, black fellow. And he said, let me help you with that. And the time we spent there together was, it was just promptness.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He showed me
so much.
And it was just, it was just,
it just happened.
Nothing formal.
No.
Because we'd get together and this thing went between us.
Was it for a couple of days?
It was.
A period of time?
Yeah, more like 4 days. Yeah. 4 days. It was 5 days. Wasn't a full week. I know he came and told me that he was leaving.
Did he say what band he was with at that time?
He wasn't with any band.
Yeah.
He was given
some of those teachers.
Guess
solos or something
like that. Guess something at this college at Terre Haute.
Yeah.
And I learned so much from him in those
couple of days. Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Because that's I think sometimes you can learn more in that kind of a setting than with a teacher, because a lot of the teachers they can't explain it to you. They can't make it as plain or as clear to you.
Well, that's the way a lot of musicians learn. Like, you learn formally in major class, but your major learning came to study with someone.
Yeah.
So they don't do that anymore.
No.
But I still don't understand how you learn jazz on a big class. You can learn the definitions, and you can play the arrangement.
The theory of it, but
I still don't understand. Yeah. Jazz is about
it's participating.
Participating in life and dealing with
circumstances.
Like we're dealing with each other.
Yeah.
There's a lot going between us right now that's not said.
Yeah.
And I still don't understand. I think that's why we have a whole lot of cookie cutter thing coming.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that I've noticed through my experience in age, and experience, you've got to be around quite a while, and you absorb a lot. You learn a lot from your peers, from elders and so forth.
That's right.
And these youngsters, they haven't had enough time, and they don't know how to disseminate information. I mean, you can show them something, but they don't grasp it totally the way you're showing it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're going to run off and play something that don't make sense. Then they'll say, well, so-and-so showed me this, but they're not doing all of it, So, and fortunately, we came through one of the best periods of time musically.
I know that.
Because like you said, with you and Freddie Webster, you played things together, and he showed you, Leroy Brown and all these guys. Oh. That's what they would do for us.
I know.
That's what they would do for us.
I appreciate you playing with Leroy.
Yes, sir.
Leroy was a teacher
at
the same time.
Hey, that period of time, I worked with Joe Westray, 51, 2, 3, and 4, back in that period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet if you brought his arrangements out now for a 9-piece band to play, they'd be hip today.
Sure.
Because he was so far ahead of his time in his writing, But that's one of the main reasons why we're trying to do this project, because there's so many of our former deceased musicians and the works and things that they did that, people don't know about,
Mm-hmm.
And it's too bad that we waited so late to try to do this,
Yeah.
But it's a shame, because we've got we have quite a wealth of people that have come out of this town,
mm-hmm.
and went on. Some of them have made major marks, and then there's a lot of them right here that are still here that have a lot to contribute.
Sure.
And
there are a lot who chose not to leave.
Yeah, yeah.
And still, it had nothing to do with their ability.
Right,
Just that they didn't want that.
Yeah. They didn't want to do that. Yeah, I mean,
want to do that.
And partly because they were stronger. How do I say this? They were more men to their families than seeking personal fame and notoriety. My responsibilities are here, and I'm going to take care of my responsibilities.
You know who comes to mind right away?
Who's that?
Robin Webster.
Yeah. Yeah.
His family.
Yeah.
His family.
Yeah. I'm so sorry that he did not do more. After the '60s, Robin just locked himself up in that barbershop.
Oh yeah.
Because
he got hit pretty hard.
Yeah.
But
all that came a little bit afterwards. I'm saying before.
Before that
was when he locked himself up in the barbershop, and then life did come down on him, But because I remember when I first came along, his name, tenor saxophone, There's a lot of names of people that I had heard of back in those older days that I really didn't get to hear them play.
Uh-huh.
You know.
There were fellows that I used to play with.
Did you ever play with Orlando?
Yeah.
Orlando Wright?
Yeah.
Tenor player?
Mm-hmm.
Les Pruitt? Carl?
I played the bass player.
Yeah.
Carl Pruitt.
Yeah. Right.
Yes,
and Les, I think, had another brother that played. Because these are names, I mean, I remember hearing these names, you know, but I didn't know them because they were a little bit ahead of me, you know. And did you work with Chicken?
Yeah, I worked with Chicken.
You were Chicken and, what's it, Johnny Jones and them.
Johnny Jones, yeah.
And who's the other one? The trumpet player that used to be with Chicken, wore glasses. What is his name? I can't even think of his name. I know him. I remember him. Because, see, when I married Bernice, you know, mm-hmm. in Evelyn, and I met Chicken, and but that was the end of his activity, mm-hmm. you know. And then I used to have, when I first bought my house up on Upland Street, I used to have Chicken come up, you know. Mm-hmm. And I had a whole lot of music around, and we'd play. You know, he played a tenor part and I played a trumpet part. But then as time went on, his eyes were getting bad, you know, and he was having difficulty seeing, and he, you know, and then that was the only plan that he was doing, you know. So then finally he just got out. Did you, when you came back to Pittsburgh and joined the union here, who were the first musicians that you began to work with that you can recall? And did you get in any, you know, did you get in any established bands that were around here?
I guess the first, established band.
Hmm.
The main band was probably Joe Westray.
Joe Westray.
Guitar player, I don't know if you ever heard of Merle Pace.
Yeah.
He used to travel with, he scared me to death.
Hmm.
Merle did. Because he used to travel with Taylor.
Okay.
And I used to tell him, I said, look, I don't think I can satisfy you.
Yeah.
He says, look, just come on.
Come on,
he said, you play piano?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, can we just come and play?
Yeah.
And that's the way he talked to.
Right.
That's the way he would talk to you.
Yeah,
you know?
Down
there. And he said, "Come on." And he drank iron. He said, "Come on, let's get iron too."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "Come on, we're gonna play." So we sit down. He was like a 10 tune.
Mm-hmm.
He was gonna maybe feature other riffs.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling it. We'll do this. We'll do this. And he just watched me when I
mm-hmm.
he had a little signal. Used to be, and I'm still thinking about Tatum. he says, you get Tatum. He says, Art Tatum.
Yeah, he said that.
And you,
that's it.
He said, you go ahead and play. And I never will forget him. He, he said, just go ahead and be you and play.
And I don't know what I think I heard him when he was with Gambrell. When they were down, you know, on Frankstown.
Yeah,
Pirate Inn.
Yeah.
I think I heard him, you know.
He would give you a workout.
He would listen.
That's right, because he was one of these guys who, it may be written in E flat.
Mm-hmm.
But it really
didn't
matter, you know.
He'd
say, I'm going to move it.
Yeah, because that's, you know, and that's a plus for you, because a lot of guys, they'll learn a tune in one key,
yeah.
And if you don't play it in that key, they can't play it.
They can't play it.
You know, and it's sad. I used to go up to Jerry Elliott's And we would take the book, and he'd play it, and I'd have to transpose it up a step. Then we would play it, I would read, and he'd go down a step, and then sometimes we'd take it to another key, or we'd be fiddling around, and wherever we play the line, whatever key that is, we would play the tune in that key. It may not be the original key, yeah, but we would just go ahead and fish to it and try to find it. But guys, I mean, a lot of guys, you know, they're hung up on, they learn it in one key, and that's all they know, you know. But that's good, and like you were saying, that was good practice for you.
We were always taught to, especially on a tough tune, to find out what the tougher passages are in the tune.
Yeah.
And then take a mm-hmm. certain passage, clear a half step up and half step down. Mm-hmm. Just that one particular
right.
passage.
Right.
If you do that on enough tune, pretty soon you're into it.
Yeah. Did you find in your early days, was there a lot of work around here for you, you know, back in the days when you first came to Pittsburgh?
There was a lot of work if you had an organized group. They didn't like changing personnel.
And were there many solo piano jobs? Did you do much solo piano work?
I did some, not a lot.
You know, you didn't do that much like in a hotel, cocktail lounge and things like that.
Most of those jobs were anything. Most of those jobs were locked up by 60.
Mm-hmm.
Those
well,
jobs
downtown,
paid anything.
Yeah.
The only jobs where you played solo, Sam Nolan was playing at Stanley's
mm-hmm.
downtown,
mm-hmm.
and at Grill Number One, where they used to have a piano.
Right. Right.
Have somebody there.
Right.
There weren't that many.
Weren't
that many places.
Did you play much in the musicians' club? That down, you know, down the old club down the hill. You know, in terms of did the bands that you were with, did they rotate bands playing in the clubs, in the club at that time? Or was it
in the club?
Yeah, in the musicians' club. You know, did they? There was just like a certain group of guys that played there, and then everybody come and sit in with
them. They just come in
and play.
Sit in, because I know it was a hard click down there at that time. Because I know who was the president. He never did do anything to me personally.
Prince Jackson?
Stoney.
Stoney, okay. Yeah.
He didn't dislike me, but he would always keep me
at bay.
At bay.
Yeah.
And I wasn't just part of his group.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But he never did anything to
mm-hmm.
me. I could go down there and get in anytime
mm-hmm.
I wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up with him. Depending upon who was on the bandstand.
Mm-hmm. Did he play? Right. Because I know, I remember a couple of times, because I had played, I mean, I was, you know, I wasn't in an organized group, but I remember being a part of the group that played upstairs, you know, and I know that they were rotating musicians, you know, and I didn't know whether you know, had gotten in on that part of it also.
The other organized group I played with around here was Calvin King.
Right.
Guitar player.
Right.
He played guitar, Tommy Soul, bass player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we had a singer, a big guy named John Thomas. We used to play here, Maryland, D.C.
What did he look like?
Kind of tall, light brown skin.
Did he try to get a band later on and try to play a little bit of trumpet?
Yeah.
And okay, I know Johnny Thomas. Yeah, because he had, because we had started a band back in 49, and then shortly after that, he kind of took over the band.
Uh-huh.
But I had heard some things about him where he had had a band before, and he used to stand down front and fake the trumpet solo, somebody else would be in the back playing. But I didn't know he was a singer. I know Johnny Thomas, yeah. Okay. Did you ever play over at what's that? The McKee's Rocks. What's that place over there? It was a theater or back on Island Avenue back in there. Because
I never played McKee's.
Okay, because Donald Woods and they used to be like I don't know what it was, a Sunday night. I know there used to be a place where the bands would play over there. Cause
I used to work a lot up in New Kennedy.
Yeah. What's that? Manorinos?
Yeah,
the guys.
They call Smokies.
Yeah.
Up there. Another. That fella had a.
Pio.
He had a hotel that was set outside of town.
Yeah, that's on Pio.
Is that him?
Black guy,
yeah.
Yeah, because I played up here with Chuck Edwards. Back out in the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I used to play up here with Chuck Edwards. Yeah, and then I think there was Elks downtown.
Yeah, the Elks downtown.
Yeah, we played in there. Did you do much down, going down the river, like Coriopolis, play over there?
Yeah, we...
The Legion down Swift.
Yeah, that's another... Yeah, the Legion.
Yeah, down Swift.
Yeah, because we had that job for... we had another established band. Harry Nash.
Right, okay. Okay. Who was in the band with you?
Harry Nash, trumpet, J.C.
Yeah.
McLean.
Right, on tenor.
Tenor.
Yeah.
Edgar Willis played bass.
Okay.
And Sandy Gloucester played drums.
Okay, that was a drummer. Right.
And we even had two or three changed uniforms.
Yeah, uniforms, yeah. Well, that's Harry.
Oh yeah,
that's Harry.
and we had that job. That, every Sunday, that was we had that job.
Okay.
We played Friday, Saturday.
For how long?
For over a year.
Yeah. Okay. Because I started working in there, because Mary D used to bring her. Did she bring her talent scouts? I mean, her talent troops down there when you were there.
Because
after that, she started. Because when we were, I worked with George Grant and them out of down from Midland.
Mm-hmm.
Beaver Falls,
mm-hmm.
and Shanks. Remember Alan Saunders?
Yeah.
Well, he was playing tenor. Because mm-hmm. me and Shanks and George Grant played bass, and we had a white boy, Stu Calhoun from New Brighton, played piano,
mm-hmm.
and Gil Clark. Remember Man Clark, drummer
yeah.
out of, okay,
mm-hmm.
well, his brother played.
Mm-hmm.
So we were there on Sundays, and Mary D would bring her singers down there. Chuck Payne,
yeah.
and Jim Hunter, and Al Boston, and there was another guy, Zay Edmonds, I think was his name, another guy. I saw him a couple of years ago as a security guard down here in East Liberty. And we were here, I was here for a long time with him. You know. Did you go to Filion or any music schools here in town, to learn any more in terms of other than private lessons, learn harmony theory and stuff like that? Did you go to Filion?
No, I didn't go to Filion.
Yeah.
There was one up there, Jenna and Shady.
Okay, you were talking to that guy, Jay.
No, this was another
metal
studio.
The studio.
And then I went to PMI.
PMI, okay. When did you go down to PMI? What years were you down there? You didn't stay that long.
I can't even remember. You know, I was in and out of
mm-hmm.
so many schools
mm-hmm.
because,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to be a physician.
Okay.
And I would come home and decide, well, look, I'm going to enroll in school
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to
do
quit
this.
Playing. And someone would talk to me about and I was dropped
yeah.
out
yeah.
and off I was pretty soon. That's why I ended up in the paramedic field.
Yeah.
I just abandoned that.
Yeah. Because then you didn't take advantage of your GI Bill and lock yourself into school then, huh?
I could have, but
yeah.
that thing would bubble in and would start
yeah.
bubbling in me. And,
yeah.
That thing,
once I get that urge to quit that, I have to quit.
Right. You're gonna satisfy.
I have to quit. That's why my family had to get used to me playing at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Because
when you gotta play, you gotta play.
I was, you know, ideas would hit me.
Yeah.
And there's no more sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'd lay down and try to go to sleep, and that thing would just keep buzzing around and around.
Mm-hmm.
And until you get up and
go through it.
Go through it.
I've done that. Because I'd get up and jot stuff down, and then it's funny, you know. And you go back to sleep, and when you get up, it's right there, the same, you know, just the way you left it when you were, you know. Go ahead.
No, you mentioned my name a little while ago. I forgot about Chuck Payne.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I used to accompany him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mr. X, all them guys want to be X guys.
Yeah. Well, I used to have a thing about, you know, it didn't matter to me whether I sold or not. I always got my, I like to
accompany. Right.
So.
And that's rare, because a lot of piano players don't know how to do that. See, they want to get out there and get in the road and you know, but that's a rare quality, and that's a good quality.
That's why George and I used to get along
so
well, because it looked like I could read George's mind.
Right, right.
It was the same thing when I used to accompany Dakota.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, before she.
I could
feel her.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of guys like, mm-hmm. look like I could get inside.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I enjoy it.
And that's good. That's a good quality, because there's so many piano players, they overplay. Spencer Bay is a good example right now, because he forgets. And this is your shot, the singer or whoever is playing,
mm-hmm.
but he's. And it does. It kind of gets in your road a lot of times. It turns up instrumentalists around. I mean, give me some space. You know, let me have some.
Well, you know, every tune doesn't necessarily. I don't have to solo on every tune because every tune doesn't necessarily fit.
Right.
You know, there's some tunes that'll fit like a glove, and there's others that may fit you like a glove. So. Just give me one of my tunes a night and let
you have it.
Let me have it, and I'm satisfied.
When you go back to your, what'd you say you went to Indianapolis or?
Yeah, I went to Indianapolis, and this booking agent sent me down.
Oh, okay. He was. You worked out of Indianapolis.
Yeah. And I ended up playing with Tiny Grass, you know.
Right, okay. And what's that, Sunset Royal, the band at Sunset Royals? The club in Indianapolis?
Sunset Terrace,
right, yeah. Right. Because we stayed there, because I was on with the carnival in 51 I forget who I was with. But anyway, we stopped at that Sunset Terrace, and the band was rehearsing.
Yeah.
Back then,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, the band was rehearsing. And then I heard Jimmy Wilkins, the trombone player. I heard a band of his, and I think I heard Freddie Hubbard, because this was back in the mid-50s, and I think it was him before he actually, took off.
At that time, Indianapolis,
Crossroads.
Yeah, nice. And I met a lot of
guys.
That's where I ran across Chris. That's the he one told me I was getting kind of discouraged.
How long you
play that thing?
Mm-hmm.
Start playing.
Yeah, right.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Like you. thing that happened 20 years.
That's right.
And I never forgot that.
Yeah.
He was a very intelligent individual. A lot of people figure he was just a kind of a flaky.
Yeah.
But that was a deep thinking.
Oh, yeah. Because Jerry gives me some stories about him when he was working with him. But they had, do you remember, was it Bellman and Waiters? You know, they used to have them kind of like clubs. You know, they were, I guess it was their union clubs, you know, places. But they would have bands and things like that. I think there was one of those in, because I remember that name out of that Indianapolis area. When you...
There were a lot of good bands around there.
Oh, yeah.
In the Midwest.
Right, right.
I remember a band out of Flint, a guy named Sugar Camel.
Right.
Yeah.
Listen. Yeah. Because I went up in 61, I went to Baldwin. There's a place called Idyllwild up in northern Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
But I went up there with Alba Ahrens, trumpet player from here, mm-hmm. and Choker was a band leader. But we played for a guy named Arthur Braggs, who was a promoter. And we played a place called Paradise. There was a lake up there, and on the other side of the lake was another club, and Phil Giles had a thing over there. And the Four Tops, and they were the house group, and there was some dancers, the Harlan Brothers or something like that, three brothers that danced. And then they'd bring in attractions, you know, Brooke Benton, Jackie Wilson, Laverne Baker, Etta Jones, Don't Go to Strangers, you know, different people like that. They'd come up for a week, but I was there all summer, you know, like through the summer. And then we went to the Flame in Detroit, Flame Show Bar, and we played 10 days there, and Etta Jones was the headliner, and we had a Mexican dance troupe, and they were part of the show. They did pageant thing, and we had, you know, them sticks, you know, them showgirls that just come out there and pose, beautiful girls that just come out there and stand around and pose, you know, had that going. But Choker, yeah, Choker was something else, man.
Choker
could play.
Yeah. When I was with Bradshaw,
mm-hmm.
that's where I met Don Coltrane.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He
right.
didn't want to talk to me the guy he was rehearsing.
Mm-hmm.
Because when he was asleep or performing,
he'd be playing.
He was playing.
I know. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because Carl Arter was telling me that same thing. Because, you know, certain things, exercising things that he'd be practicing, and he'd ask him about it. You know, he'd say, well, do this and do that and do that. That's true musicians, see, you know.
But not everyone who gains knowledge now seems to want to guard it, jealous.
Yeah.
Well,
it's
as if they're gonna always keep it. Just to realize that anything we have in this world is only ours temporarily.
Temporary. That's it. That's it.
Yeah.
Well, do you remember? Okay. You were pretty active up to the 60s in terms of playing around here. I mean, you work with anybody and everybody locally, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then when the merge happened, were you still as active following the merge up to a point? Because I know a lot of musicians more or less caved in and just, I mean, they got out of it after the merge.
It wasn't a matter of getting out, it was like night and day. Before the merger, I won't say turn down jobs, but my telephone was
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it was, yeah.
After the merger.
Yeah, the economics, yeah.
Every once in a while, I mean, every once in a while,
mm-hmm.
someone would give me a call.
Mm-hmm.
And then gradually, they would
make. Yeah, yeah. Because I know the early part, I mean, like 66, through the end of the 60s, you know, gradually and gradually, because the clubs and places that we had to play that they were just, we just began to lose them. You know, just folded and folded and folded. And did you attend many of the union meetings after the merge? Did you go to many of the?
I went to one.
One.
And okay. It didn't take the sky to fall on me
to tell you
to see which way that was going.
Did you? Okay. Now we had an organization called BMOP, Black Musicians of Pittsburgh, and because we had the court case. Did you come to very many of those meetings?
Because Doc used to stay on.
Yeah, right. Okay. Because I know that during that period of time, there really wasn't, you know, any work. I don't know how. I think we were trying to go about getting some of the work from downtown, but it just didn't happen because I know Ducky, they were supposed to be sending contracts up to him because I was on that ad hoc committee, me and Spaulding and Doc and him, and it just wasn't happening.
Everything dried up. There were two spots up in Saxonburg that used to call.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew I could get work.
Mm-hmm.
One was at the hotel up there.
Oh, okay.
Hotel. Okay. But they just got called.
Were you going up there as a single or were you take a group?
You take a group
up. Yeah. Okay.
They knew when they couldn't get me,
right.
They could get the drummer.
Right.
And, they stopped calling us all together. And I heard that all white bands were up there.
Hmm.
We had all, any holiday,
mm-hmm.
we had
jobs,
people.
Yeah.
Mm. So after the murder.